We do have that partial government shutdown in effect with no negotiations taking place overnight between Democrats and Republicans. That shutdown means that many workers could be furloughed or even fired, as President Trump has mentioned.
Today, we're talking about the government shutdown and how it affects regular Americans like you and me. Fundamentally, no matter where you work, you want to get paid. And the first thing that happens when the government can't get its act together is that essential workers have to show up, but they don't get paid. Here's how that breaks down. Members of the U.S. Armed Forces will have to report to work without pay. Support staff, like clerical workers, will be furloughed. Air traffic control services will continue, but without pay until the government is funded again. Social Security benefits, considered mandatory under law, will continue regardless of a shutdown, so recipients can expect to continue receiving their payments. However, fewer workers could mean that processing new Social Security applications could be delayed. Food stamps and SNAP benefits will continue during a shutdown, but the number of people administering them will be cut because most of them will be furloughed, and the ones who remain are working without pay. The Postal Service will experience business as usual because they're an independent entity that is generally funded through the sale of products and services and not by tax dollars. It's worth noting that members of Congress will continue to receive paychecks during a shutdown. Their pay is constitutionally protected. Lucky them. President Donald Trump's salary is protected too, but he donates his $400,000 in pay every year. Because October 1st marks the beginning of the government's 2026 fiscal year, no funding is currently in place for active duty and reserve military members and most other workers. Here's Newell Norman from WWL Radio in New Orleans, pulling no punches on where we are as a country and what another shutdown means for us.
I'm not going to even get into the finger pointing about whose fault it is. I would much rather approach it this way. Get your it together, right? This is one of the primary functions of Congress, is to pass a budget. We know of the deadline date every year. Why is it a big surprise? Why do we always wait till the last moment? Why is there this creation of angst and anxiety amongst government employees, amongst others who have planned vacations and want to visit national parks and want to visit other federal properties, or whatever the case may be? I just simply ask the question, why? Why do we need a deadline to cause people to come together, talk, and resolve their differences and move forward? Anybody that advocates for a government shutdown is an idiot. I don't like using those words, but I'm just going to put it out there. This is crazy. As if Americans aren't struggling enough with all kinds of different issues, this ideological warfare that we're involved in, it doesn't need to transcend into this bill and getting it together. Just do your job. And actually, my position of a part-time Congress, I think, is getting stronger and stronger. We're involved in too many things, right? And we need to get back to the basics, to the core issues that matter to the citizens of this country. Get in, resolve these issues, pass whatever bills you got to pay, and go home. But this all-year-long thing going round and round and round, it's craziness. We hadn't adopted a budget in decades. It might have been the last time I think we had a balanced budget was under Bill Clinton. Why can we not get this together? Why do we keep kicking the can down the road? We cannot be all things to all people. Anybody who is staring at a $37 trillion deficit should recognize that we can't be all things to all people. Sorry, would be nice, be great. We'd love to be able to do that. We got to take a stand. We got to set priorities. We got to fund the basics first. And then all of that other superfluous crap that everybody wants to get involved in comes second. And then maybe we'll be better served, right? So I won't get into a partisan argument. It's of no value at this juncture. I just would remind voters, next time these elections come around for Congress, ask these folks, can we resolve the budget issue and the third, fourth week of August, first week of September, and call it a day, and then move on to other things that need to be resolved? It's craziness. Which leads me to my next observation. I don't know about you, but it strikes me odd. If you get elected president, you are referred to as the commander-in-chief. And one of those things that comes under that label is you are the commander-in-chief of the military. And you name a civilian who will serve on your cabinet as the Secretary of Defense. So this week, the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, and let me just say straight out, I am not a fan. I am not a fan of a lot of things that he does and a lot of things that he says, but we'll go from there. Just so everybody's clear, right? And I've made myself clear about the same thing with Donald Trump. But I am sick and tired of pundits, mainstream media, making the observation, oh, this is so out of the ordinary. He's bringing 800 senior officers from around the world to Quantico, Virginia, the home base of the U.S. Marine Corps, and he's going to have a meeting, and you know, and they start engaging in the conjecture about what it is that he's going to do or say, and this and that and everything else, and it turned out to be nothing even close to what anybody was predicting that it was going to be about. But we focused on, this has never been done before. So what? When you elect new leadership, they may do things in a different way. I hate when I hear that, because that was like when I'd call people into my office and ask them, well, why do we do it this way? Well, Sheriff, that was the way we always did it. There was nothing that would boil my blood faster than that response, because it's actually a non-response. So all of this criticism about Pete Hegseth calling 800 senior officers to Quantico, because that's never been done before, is crap. And the fact of the matter is, when it comes down to national defense, we should be a little bit more willing to give folks the benefit of the doubt. I don't care if they got an R or a D behind their name. It doesn't matter to me. It's about leadership. It's about credible leadership. And God forbid that Pete Hegseth wants our military to be in good shape, to do physical training every day, to make sure that you are battle ready, war ready, to make sure that when you are called upon, you are ready to defend this country. That's what you signed up for. You didn't sign up for cocktails at a country club. Your primary mission is to defend this country and to be a deterrence because of the readiness of your unit, the physicality of your unit, the ability to beat down your opponent, your enemies. When did we lose sight of what it actually takes to get these things done? The commitment, the dedication. Is there any pride left? This used to be the case, and over the past couple of administrations, in the Obama administration, the Biden administration, I will get partisan now, folks, they relaxed the rules. They relaxed the rules. And now we are castigating individuals that talk about this. Who are these elitists in the military, these generals that are speaking anonymously to the media now, talking about this and how bad this is, that we're not going to any longer be distracted by identity months and DEI offices and, as Hegseth said, dudes in dresses, and no more climate change worship, no more division, distraction, gender delusions. He's right. That is not your primary purpose. That's not your mission. You're not there to perpetuate ideological issues. You are there to be ready to defend this nation.
But what happens when the military you're trying to whip into shape is laboring without pay? Here's Annie Fry at KFTK Radio in St. Louis with how Congress has reached this stalemate.
It is a pleasure to have on the show with us once again Congressman Mike Bost. He is the representative for Illinois' 12th District and also chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Congressman, thanks for being here with us today. I wanted to get your thoughts on Pete Hegseth. You bet. What do you think about that?
First off, I've known Pete for quite some time, and Pete and I have always talked about the fact that we believe that our military, their job is to fight our nation's battles. That means that their job is to deliver a bullet downrange or to support the people that are delivering the bullet downrange. That is exactly what our military needs to be. They don't need to be woke. We don't need to down the physical fitness test. They need to be in the best possible shape they can possibly be. They need to be ready to be our war fighters when we need them. They need to have be put and assigned to their MOSs, which is their military occupational services, and do them to the best of their ability and be trained on those and those alone. We don't and if you spend too much time, as they have over the last several years, worried about being woke, worried about gender affirming, doing all of these things, then you can't do that job, which is the most important job, which is provide a national defense. Mm. And he is exactly right, and he did a great job of delivering that message to all of our officers that were present at the Pentagon this morning.
Congressman Mike Boss with us, the chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. I'm certain that you represent very many brave and important and valuable females who are veterans of this country. I imagine that women have been very important in the safety and security of this country. That seems to be, I tuned in MSNBC for about 3 minutes, Congressman. They're very concerned about the women. What do you think?
Well, don't be concerned about the women. There are certain standards that women have to meet just as well. And not only that, women have their MOSs that they will be assigned to. Some of those women are some of the best sailors, some of the best airmen, some of the best Marines and best soldiers that we have. The statement was very simple, though. There is a standard that should be met if you're going to be a warfighter, and that is that shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, I did send this. I sent Pete Hegseth's comments. Just I didn't even say anything to it to one of my dear friends who has retired from the Army and has done many tours overseas. And I just sent it to him. And he goes, finally, true equality. Well, let's shift gears here a little bit. I wanted to give you the opportunity to comment on that because it's a direct news story today. But of course, a government shutdown. I'm hearing it called the Schumer shutdown. What needs to take place in order for the government to get back open?
First off, just so you know, we've done our job. We sent a temporary continuing resolution that goes through November 21st so that we can then work on the rest of the budget. There should not be a government shutdown. Unfortunately, in the Senate, it takes 60 votes, not a simple majority, 51 votes, to take up the bill. Schumer himself, 7 months ago, passed a similar, if not exact, well, a similar continuing resolution. But because the politics of this is he's getting pressure from the left, especially AOC, who's threatening to challenge him in a primary for his Senate seat, and also from his left actually in the Senate that are wanting to challenge him for being the Democrat leader. So he is decided politically, even though during the last administration, they voted and argued why it is a government shutdown is never right 13 times. Let me say that again. 13 times during the previous administration, they voted for CRs. Okay? So this shows just how political this is. Then the answer to the second part of your question. The big problem I have is, so politically, he's going to do this so he has no, that so he can say he did what his left wanted to do. But I don't know how he gets out of it.
Yeah, that's the question.
What is the offer that's good enough? But and there's not going to be an offer because we exactly know where it is and what it is that we passed and why we passed this continuing resolution the way we did so that we keep some specialty stuff open. That's why we sent it over. But this offer that he has given to the president of wanting $1.5 trillion to basically prop up Obamacare and also to provide health Medicaid for illegals is ridiculous, and the taxpayers know it. And the taxpayers say, don't do that with my tax dollars.
What's really going on here is that Democrats are demanding funding for health care subsidies that are expiring for millions of people under the Affordable Care Act. If they expired, it would cause Obamacare insurance premiums to spike nationwide. Republicans have refused to negotiate and have encouraged Trump to steer clear of any talks. But is this just all political theater? Here's more from The Mark Cox Show.
Charles Payne, host of Making Money.
So let's talk government shutdown for a minute. I know it, at least on futures, I haven't seen the numbers here lately. The futures were down a little bit on this. What kind of impact does this have on the economy?
Very little. I think the markets, futures are down just slightly on some maybe other things. You know, we just had the ADP number come in that was really low. But it's one of these things where it's more hyped than anything else. And at the end of the day, they all agree to a deal. And whoever was furloughed gets paid back money. And it's like a free vacation. And the government gets even more bloated. They need to stop this whole charade because, you know, if this is one of these areas where they start this horse trading and we end up with these bridges of nowhere. You know, the so-called temporary debt ceiling has been around for decades and it's not temporary, you know. So if you get rid of it, this becomes a leverage. It becomes a leveraging point. It becomes a talking point. And, you know, I don't know why. I mean, it feels like both parties want to keep it in because it always seems to kind of give them political fodder. But it doesn't do anything for the American public. And so I feel like if there was a way we could all vote on this as a nation, hey, get rid of it, because it's not, if it was a debt ceiling, it was a debt ceiling, but it's not. It just becomes a point where you guys can, you know, fire up the masses and then cut deals and say, hey, you know, we had to do it for the sake of keeping the government open. But, you know, we have learned something. We've learned this one term, non-essential workers. We've learned that we can have a functioning government with a lot fewer employees. And that's what those are supposed to be all about. So,
right.
It's really just more theater than anything else.
We're starting a new month today, October 1st. What can we expect out of the Fed this month? Are we going to see another quarter cent drop? And if so, how do you think that could impact the lending market as well as the housing market?
It's interesting you said that. So in anticipation of the Fed making that first cut, we saw mortgage rates come down a lot. And we saw a big jump in applications. So since the cut, mortgage rates have gone up a little bit. You know, there's the old buy the rumor, sell the news kind of reaction. This morning we found out that overall mortgage applications in the last week were down almost 13%, most of that in refis. So there's no doubt that this is extraordinarily sensitive. Like the housing market the wants this really badly, and I think it's something that is critical for everyone. So, again, we'll see what happens because the government's number comes out on Friday. But ADP down 32,000. The street thought we were going to be up 45,000. And what even more adds more salt to the wound is that the only niche of hiring that was up was in large companies. Small companies were devastated. So lending costs have to come down. They just simply have to come down. And I think a minimum of a 20. Hey, if we get a Friday jobs report like the Marist's ADP report, we could be talking about 50 basis points.
Will a government shutdown cost people who don't work for the federal government? Here's the noon business hour on WBBM News Radio in Chicago.
Government shutdown is a familiar dance at this point. It's been used it's happened quite a bit over the last 30 years. So I'm sure we have research and data that tells us about the impact of a government shutdown on the economy in both the near and long term.
Yeah, we do. But, you know, every single one is a little bit different. And so, you never exactly know how these things are going to play out. They are dangerous, and the Trump administration has made it clear that it is going to use this opportunity to try to create some full-time unemployment on the part of existing government workers if it goes through. They're not going to have temporary furloughs. They're going to trim government payrolls permanently. They've been seeking to do this, and they think this is an opportunity to do it. And this is basically their counter proposal to the Democrats saying that they won't agree to extending the debt and to keep the shutdown from occurring unless they get extra money poured into Obamacare that was taken out by the big, beautiful bill. So we're at an impasse here, and the Democrats are trying to get something for this, and the Republicans are saying no way, and so we'll see.
What are the second order effects if these furloughed workers are laid off permanently? I mean, obviously, everybody who's laid off by the government will eventually get a new job somewhere. But in the near term, what would that do to an already cooling labor market?
Well, that's an interesting question because, you know, we have these different things going on. One is that the job growth has slowed. Partly because there's somewhat weaker demand, but because we closed the border and we don't have the same amount of people coming over the border as labor supply to go to work. So because labor supply is crimped, economists now think that maximum job growth on a monthly basis might be as little as 50,000 per month. And before the benchmark revision that we saw a couple of weeks ago, we thought the jobs were growing at 140,000 a month, but that revision basically took it down to 70,000. That helps to explain why there was that three-month revision that took job growth down even more. So we're trying to come to grips really with what job growth is. And at the same time, when job growth has come down and people are complaining there aren't enough jobs, we're being told that jobs are going to disappear because of AI. And that maybe there are even now too many jobs out there because AI is going to be taking them away. So there's an awful lot of confused discussion about what's going on in the labor market.
And speaking of jobs, we do have a jobs report on Friday. And if the Bureau of Labor Statistics is shuttered, actually, I've heard that number has been canceled. So if Friday is not jobs day after all, you know, for those who try to assess the health of the labor market, what do you do when you're flying blind?
Well, if you fly blind, then you better make sure you're looking out the window. But I have not heard that the number is canceled. I believe that they firmed this number up on Wednesday or Thursday beforehand. So there's no reason why they couldn't announce it. You know, it doesn't take much to announce it. The number has basically already been generated and vetted and, you know, and it's all set to be released. So I think that sounds like an exaggeration. However, there are the possibilities for disruptions out there, and it is possible that they could decide not to release the number. You know, the government wants to make it sound like this is really a draconian thing. The Trump administration could say they're not going to release the number because of the shutdown. There are a lot of possibilities here, and there's a lot of politics involved. And so I don't know that the economics really tells us what the politics is going to do. I think it rarely does.
Staunchly conservative Tara Servatius from WORD has a take that may surprise you, where she, gasp, praises a Democrat for being the only one who's not gaslighting.
They need new voters. And that's why they're throwing down here the shutdown and demanding that they get the illegal immigrant funding for healthcare. And I'm going to explain it, go into more in depth in a little bit, but on why they would do that. But this is absolutely key. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to be honest here because the gaslighting from both sides is extreme here, okay? It's not just the Democrats. Let me tell you why. The only person I can find point blank telling you the truth right now about what is going on at the Capitol with the shutdown, I hate to say it, is John Fetterman, Democrat senator from Pennsylvania, who flat out said, and I played the audio in the last segment, well, we're just passing Biden's budget again. The Democrats voted for that months ago.
It's amazing that you mentioned that. That's exactly what I was thinking.
It's a continuing resolution.
The Democrats have voted against the continuing resolution that they voted for the last time. It's a John Kerry moment. We were for it before we were against it.
So, yeah, exactly. So all it is, it's Biden's budget, and they're just continuing it. They loved this, okay? They voted for it in March because it's Biden's budget. So when you've got the GOP leadership out there going, oh, Democrats trying to shut everything down because they're demanding illegal immigrant health care. They were. But this is a huge dodge for them. So they don't have to tell their constituents and talk about why are you passing Biden's budget? I mean, the Democrat Party just hit a 30-year low in polling. Why are you passing Biden's budget? They don't want to answer that question. They can't answer that question. Now, what am I talking about? It's a continuing resolution, right? So you either vote it up or you vote it down. It's called a clean CR, right? But it just continues Biden's budget. 2 years ago, Lee, because it's October 1st, 2 years ago in October, Mike the Knife Johnson was elected speaker. He's been lying ever since. To get elected, he lied. He said he would do a very important thing, and it's why he was chosen. He would do 12 appropriations bills. Why? When you do appropriations bills, you can go through and cut stuff out line by line, right? You can craft the Republican plan instead of passing Biden's over and over again. 2 years ago, he said we would do that. For most of the last century, Lee, that's what Congress did every year. They sat there and they worked on appropriations bills. Have we seen one of those? No, we have not. 2 years. And we had great audio a few months ago. It was in, actually the beginning of the year after Trump took office as a Republican, who had the courage to say, hey, I'm sitting in these committees. We're not marking up appropriations bills. We're not doing anything in these committees. So there's not even an attempt here, Lee. There's not even a, well, we had an appropriations bill, but we can't get the votes. They're not even trying. That's the Republican leadership on the Hill. And that is why Democrats have a favorability rating of 30%, but Republicans, not Trump, but the Republican Party has a favorability rating of 38. We are a whole stinking 8 points ahead of them because they suck. So what the Republican Party is doing right now, the one in Congress, not Trump, is going, well, you know, hey, look at these Democrats over here. They're shutting down government to get funding for illegal immigrants. Okay, but what are you doing? Well, they don't want to talk about what it is they just passed because it's Biden's budget. And there's no excuse for that. And the reason they do it, Lee, they'd rather spend big. They just want to spend big. You pass Biden's budget, create confusion. And yeah. Now, on the Democrats, I want to defend them a little. And I did this yesterday. Their logic. I've heard a lot of talk show hosts laughing at them. Ha, ha, ha. You thought you could get funding for illegal immigrant health care out of the Republicans. Well, why wouldn't you think that? It's actually very logical. They're passing Biden's budget. Why not throw some illegal immigrant healthcare funding under there? I mean, heck, after Trump won, Mike the Knife was trying to fund the Global Engagement Center so they could continue defunding X and silence us all. That was what the pressure was. Global Engagement Center pressures advertisers not to advertise around conservative content. And then turns around and pressures social media not to allow conservative content. Mike had funded it. That's your Republican leadership. So don't kid yourself. And, you know, the only person here, again, Lee, that I hope that we're going to see something out of, it can't count on Republicans in Congress, okay? They're useless. They pass Biden budgets. That's what they do with their time. And believe me, they deliberately do not create appropriations bills because if they did, they would have to cut stuff and someone might want to actually pass it. They can't even take that risk. They just pass Biden's budget. These are the people who just went on vacation. So that when they got back, they didn't have to go on vacation. It's not mandatory. So that when they got back, they could be like, oh, no, we're up against the deadline. Time to pass Biden's budget again for the, I don't know, umpteen time in 2 years. But at least Donald Trump saying, OK, I'm going to use the shutdown. I'm going to do the cuts because he's won the right to do that from the courts. So maybe we'll get some cuts. I don't know. We'll see. They're all full of it. Except John Fetterman. I am not, and I'm not pleased to have to tell you that.
Yes.
I'm not. Here he is telling the truth. The only one on both sides, by the way.
It is always, always wrong to shut our government down. That is a core responsibility. I'm always going to vote against those things. And now that CR was the same CR from the Biden administration as well, too.
Right.
For me, I'm a big believer of if you want to change the policies, win elections.
He went on to say in the interview, Lee, that, look, the Democrats all voted for in March because it's Biden's budget. If Democrats want to play smart, they'll send more people out to say that so our side will hear it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.